And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Hey, have you ever met a pipsqueak? A pipsqueak. Well, let me introduce you to a new world of words if you haven't. Pipsqueak. P-I-P-S-Q-U-E-A-K. What is it? Well, pipsqueak is someone who, well, he's like a bully. He's a bully, all right. He's more than glad, he or she, in fact, to act like a big shot and to go around barking orders. They pretend to be more than they are. And like Charles Dickens' abominable Mr. Womble, the pipsqueak puts on an air of humility. And, you know, I'm so humble. Oh, yes. But give him a chance, and he will be a tyrant. I met a lot of people like that in the military. Turned out to be pipsqueaks. But they were bullies, you know, and used to see them in basic training particularly. I was assigned at Lackland Air Force Base for almost 4 years, and I met a lot of sergeants like that. They were really just tyrants and bullies, and they really would love to humiliate the basic trainees there in boot camp. But when an officer walked in, I mean, they began to shake. They were so afraid of the guy. They themselves were just nothing but a big pipsqueak. Sometimes a pipsqueak walks with a swagger. He loves to oppress other people. But again, when their superior walks in, the pipsqueak shrinks and disappears back into the woodwork. Faced with a bigger bully than they are, the fearful, groveling pipsqueak is quick to say yassa and nosa. And the buck stops here. Uh-oh. The buck stops. Now, who said that? Well, that happened to be Harry Truman, President of the United States. Harry Truman was, in fact, the classical pipsqueak. Sort of a short guy. Always wanted to be more than he was. But somehow, no doubt due to two factors that we're going to talk about today, he was given quite a bit of power. In fact, became President of the United States. Now, he was elected for one term, but his first term, really just 1 year, he received because he was vice president under Franklin Roosevelt, and Roosevelt died, and then Truman took over. But after that term, he ran again for president, and being a little pipsqueak that he was going to be defeated because, you know, he didn't have enough money to really do a good job in campaigning. And then a Jewish Zionist came up, in fact, a bunch of Jewish Zionists, and said, I tell you what, Mr. Truman, Mr. President, if you give us what we want as Jews here in America, and that is we want the United States to recognize Israel in the Middle East as a new nation, a Jewish state, if you'll give us that and sort of look the other way and pretend you don't see it when we kill and suppress and rob all the Palestinians and take all their land and kill a bunch of Palestinians, we'll give you $2 million as a bribe. We'll bring it to you in suitcases, $100 bills. Then you'll have enough money because $2 million back way back then, my friends, over a half century ago, that was a lot of money. And the pipsqueak went for it. And the pipsqueak squeaked by with just enough votes to beat Mr. Thomas Dewey, governor of New York, and to win another term as president of the United States. Now, no sooner had Truman, thanks to the money that he got from the Jews, no sooner than he was sworn in than, well, he did everything they told him to. In fact, even before that, he did. Within 4 months of receiving the $2 million bribe, he signed a document which made Israel a new nation in the Middle East. And that did allow them to go in, although there, at that time there were only 6,000 Jews in Palestine. Only 6,000 Jews. There were 800,000 Palestinians. Now, whose land was it? I want to repeat that. 6,000 Jews, 800,000 Palestinians. How do I know that? Oh, I've researched it. It's easy to find if you want to find something. Of course, don't ask the Jewish groups in America, like the ADL and the American Jewish Committee and Southern Poverty Law Center and all of those crumbs. They'll lie to you. In fact, this is an interesting thing, but Prime Minister Golda Meir, the Jewish woman, lesbian, I believe, but I don't know that for sure, but she sure looked like it. I know she was a communist. We do know that. But she was once asked how many Palestinians were living here in what is now called the State of Israel when the Jews came in. She said, how many Palestinians resided here? And the reporter said, yes. And her answer, well, there were none. There were no Palestinians here. What unmitigated liars these people are. There were none. It would be sort of like, you know, somebody asking you, well, when the white man came to the United States, you know, Christopher Columbus or whoever, Leif Erikson, whoever it was, how many Native Americans lived here? How many natives lived here? And you look at them and say, well, there were none. We didn't take anybody's land. There were no Indians here. Folks, if you want to steal somebody's land or take it or whatever, at least don't pretend they didn't even exist when you got there. But that's what the Jews do. Why? Because they're a bunch of sniveling, cowardly liars. But of course, that's because they're not in charge of the whole world. When they get to be in charge of the whole world, they'll still be liars. They just won't be sniveling. Then they'll be big bullies. In fact, they're already becoming the bullies of the whole world. But let's get back to Truman. You see, I think Truman is a very important character in history, and I would love for you, my good friends, to know more about him. I think he was one of our more important presidents. Now, I didn't say one of our best presidents. No. For one thing, the guy was a kiss-up to the communist. He and Stalin, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't have kissing contests. Maybe they did in secret. I'm not sure. Harry Truman was a Freemason. Well, Joseph Stalin, dictator of Soviet Russia, was also a Freemason. And all of the top Jewish leaders were Masons. In my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, I have a picture of Harry Truman, all of his, wearing all of his Masonic regalia, his costume. You know, his little apron, you know, the 33rd degree medallion. And painted in, is, I guess it's painted because I've never seen it in a real, I mean, I've seen him in lodges, but never right behind the speaker or the master mason or whatever you want to call him. And by the way, Harry Truman went way beyond the third degree, the Master Mason. He became a 33rd degree Freemason, very high up. And as a matter of fact, Harry Truman once stated and was quoted as saying, quote, I would rather be a Master Mason than President of the United States. To which I'd like to reply, although I can't talk to him anymore, he's dead and in hell. But Mr. President, if he were alive, I'd be saying this. We would prefer, or I personally, I prefer you to be a Freemason too rather than President of the United States. But regrettably, we were socked with you, weren't we? Stuck with you or whatever. Now, how did this idiot of a guy, he wasn't a college graduate, although probably wouldn't matter. There are a lot of insane, crazy, incompetent PhDs running around, that's for sure. But you still might ask the question, because most presidents were well-educated and such, how did he get to be president without a college degree? Well, let's see, it has to do with three factors, really. You see, Harry Truman served for a while. He was like a reserve, you know. He wasn't like a regular officer. But for a few months, they sent him over to Europe. He was one of these, you know, typical reserve, all like a reserve, National Guardsman or whatever, there in Missouri. He actually lived out on the farm with his parents. He was a farmer. But World War I came along, and he talked to some friends at his Masonic Lodge, and they said, you know, Harry, everybody's going and joining up to go overseas and fight for America. And we'd like to promote you to some political office here in the county, the area around Kansas City, Missouri. We'd like for you to be part of the Missouri political network, but you really need some military experience on your resume. Now, there was another man named Frank Pendergast, also at the lodge. And then there was yet another guy named Jacobson, a Jew, who was at the same Masonic lodge. They were all, you know, brothers in the lodge, the Jew and Mr. Pendergast and the farmer, uneducated farmer, Harry Truman. They all decided to join up together to get that credential. And now they didn't stay, you know, very long in the military. As I said, they were only in the military for a few months, I mean, on active duty. But they did do their duty. You have to give them some credit for that. Back in those days, they didn't have slackers and draft dodgers like came up in Vietnam era. So they went over and did their duty. And they got that little credential. This Mason went over to Europe during the big war, World War I. Now, what happened to these men? Well, Eddie Jacobson, after the war, he and Truman went to some Jewish banker friends of his, and they gave him the money to start a clothing shop for men, a men's clothing shop. That's okay. Be a small businessman. Great. Now, Truman wasn't much of a businessman, and neither was Jacobson. So it wasn't very long till their clothing shop went out of business. They went bankrupt. Well, now we get to the third guy, Mr. Pendergast. Seems that Pendergast had a family that was pretty important. They were mafia types. They didn't mind doing all kind of dirty criminality acts. And, of course, being his old war buddy and his Masonic pal, Mr. Pendergast said to Harry Truman, "Hey, Harry, we Pendergast pretty well run Kansas City. In fact, we own Kansas City. We run the politics here. We're called the Pendergast Machine. We're so politically powerful. And you know, I like you. You're my brother in the Mason fraternity. And you and I went over to Europe for several months in uniform. So we're military pals as well. How would you like to be in politics? We'd like to make you a county commissioner." Well, you know, Harry wasn't enjoying the farm life very much, so he said, "Okay, good. I don't know anything about politics, but I'll be glad to do it, make a few bucks, naturally." Well, of course, being part of the Pendergast Machine, Harry did whatever they told him to do. He was very faithful, you know, like Tony Soprano, and did whatever the big boys told him to do. You might say he was a lieutenant and they were captains and generals in the mafia. And, you know, before long, they said, "You know, Harry, you do such a good job for us doing what we tell you to do. We're going to make you the head of the whole commissioner's court. You'll be like the chief executive of the whole county." Okay, good. He took that position. And he did such a good job of kissing their boots that and the Pendergast Machine was so powerful, they basically began to have a say in what happened in the whole state. And his friend Thomas called up Harry and said, "You've been doing a good job for us, licking our boots." Now I'm sort of paraphrasing everything. I'm sure he didn't say exactly that. "How would you like to be senator of Missouri? Because whoever we nominate, the Pendergast Machine, whichever Democrat we nominate will get the job. Do you want it? And of course, will you continue polishing our boots or licking the bottoms, you know, whatever they do?" And Harry said, "Yeah." So next thing he knew, he was running for the Senate, and he won, naturally, because they always make sure their guy wins. So he was the new senator from Missouri. Didn't matter how stupid he was or dumb or anything else. He was their man. And it wasn't long after that till another Mason buddy of his, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, "I need a vice president." And they said, "We got just a guy for you. He's been a faithful Mason. Now he's senator. Now nobody knows much about him." Well, FDR says, "Well, that's all I need to know. He's a high-level Mason. Been faithful." Okay. And he became vice president of the United States. He wasn't a pipsqueak. He just did what they told him to do. He was the gopher. Now, when Roosevelt died in, what was that, 1945, I think, actually it was, you know, before the, in fact, the war wasn't quite over. The Japanese had not surrendered there in 1945, but it was essentially over. America was the victor both in Europe and in Asia. It was just a matter of wrapping it up. And it's interesting, Truman became a big bully as soon as Roosevelt died. Roosevelt, you see, didn't even call the guy. Didn't give him the time of day. He never did anything for any of his vice presidents. You know, they were out of the loop, as it's called. Now, the little pipsqueak began to swagger. And it's sort of interesting. Did you know that within 3 months of assuming office after the death of President Roosevelt, Truman fired 6 out of 10 of Roosevelt's cabinet secretaries? Fired 6 out of the 10. Got his own people in there. One of Roosevelt's men he called, quote, a blockhead and a nut. Well, I always thought that a blockhead and a nut probably knows a blockhead and a nut. So the other guy probably was one. So Harry became the 33rd president of the United States, which I think is a very fitting number. You know, 33 is the highest level Freemason ritual celebrant, you might call him. So the number 33 has important occult and esoteric significance in the Masonic secret society. He was the 33rd degree. I mean, he had to be. The guy before it was 32, so it's not as if he chose the number 33, but that's maybe coincidence sometimes works out like that, okay? Now, tough, gruff, and decisive man this President Truman became. And he's the guy that had a little sign put out on his desk. It says, the buck stops here. And he also said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Oh, he was a tough guy. While acting tough, behind the scenes, he was, in fact, a sniveling, boot-licking little pipsqueak. Now, he didn't have to do what the Pendergast machine from Kansas City said anymore. But now he had to do what the Zionists said. Just like FDR had to do what they said, now it was Harry Truman's time to do whatever they said. Now, his advisors came to him shortly after he took the office of president and said, Harry, or Mr. President, we have something that you don't know about called the atomic bomb. And we could explode it and blow up, you know, a sizable part of Japan with them. But the Japanese have already offered to surrender. They want to surrender. Just give them some terms and they'll do it. They'd prefer not to surrender unconditionally, but they hadn't got much of a say about it. The emperor wants to resign. Not resign, but surrender. Not only the Japanese emperor, but the head of its military, the admirals, the generals. They've lost to us. We've taken every island, Okinawa, Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima, and so forth. Johnston Island, and they're ready to surrender. And not only that, but our conventional bombing, let alone the possibility of atomic bombs, our conventional bombing has destroyed most Japanese cities and military sites. There's not a lot left there to bomb, but civilians. But then the Jews came, and by the way, the advisors also told Truman that, you know, if they don't surrender unconditionally, what we could do is just take, you know, an uninhabited island somewhere and ask for the Japanese to come out, admirals and generals and so forth, and watch as we exploded an atomic bomb. And when they see the massive power and the kill capacity of that atomic bomb that we have just demonstrated to them, they'll be ready to surrender unconditionally for sure. So it was there. In fact, we could have chosen a little bitty town, even in Japan. It would have meant human lives, but we could have chosen some area, 5,000 population or something, and exploded an atomic bomb. They certainly would have surrendered then, boy. But before he was able to make a decision on that, Truman was visited by his Jewish bosses. Morgenthau, Henry Morgenthau, and Bernard Baruch. And they said to him, you know what? Now, remember, they controlled America. They controlled America's media. They controlled certainly all of its entertainment in Hollywood. And they controlled most of Congress and now the presidency. The Jews, the Zionists, were in charge of America. Certainly Wall Street was their habitat. And these two Jewish men, Morgenthau and Baruch, as well as other Jewish bigwigs, said to Truman, we have met together, our council of Jews, and we want you to pick two quite large Japanese cities. It doesn't matter if they're civilian or not. And we want you to take the two bombs we've got and blow up those cities. It'll mean hundreds of thousands of Japanese civilians, men, women, children, will suffer horribly. They'll either be dead or have horrible radiation burns, but we want it. And Truman says, well, why do you want me to do that? And they said to him, we want the whole world to see that the United States, which we control, has this horrible weapon. And if the nations of the world do not do what we want in setting up this United Nations and joining it, and then doing whatever we Jews want, they'll know they'll get it too. In other words, we want to demonstrate what a powerful nation the Jews own in the United States. How powerful then we are. And by the way, the Jews also controlled Stalin at the time and Soviet Russia. And it wasn't long after that until it was discovered that the Jews of America had stolen the secrets of the atomic bomb and given them to the commies. And the Soviet Union, thanks to the Jews, had the atomic weapons. And it wasn't long after that till the Jews of America stole the atomic bomb plans and the materials for atomic bombs and gave them to Israel. So that Israel had the newly founded Israel, 1948. And then the Jews of Israel, they had the atomic bomb. All with the understanding that now the three countries, the two superpowers, the USSR and the USA, and then our own little fiefdom of Israel, all have the atomic bomb. And now the whole world, you see, was supposed to shake and quiver, knowing that the Jews had their fingers on this monstrous weapon and could destroy any nation on earth with such weapons. It is necessary, they told Mr. President, for the world to see how awesome is this great weapon. It is necessary then to destroy a sizable number of human beings and architecture, buildings, schools, hospitals. And so it was done to please the Jews. And of course, within a couple of short days, the Japanese surrendered unconditionally after the emperor toured those areas, those two cities, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and saw the widespread devastation. In other words, what I'm telling you, my friends, was that the sniveling little pipsqueak Truman murdered hundreds of thousands of people, and he did it for the Jews. You'll remember that the invention, the development of the atomic bomb was done through a secret military project called the Manhattan Project. Have you ever thought about that? You see, that project was carried out in New Mexico at Alamogordo. So why was it called the Manhattan Project if it was done in New Mexico? What do they call it? The New Mexico Project. Or the Alamogordo, or the White Sands Proving Grounds Project, or at worst, how about Albuquerque? Project Albuquerque, since it's the largest city in New Mexico. Well, no! The Jews wanted people to know it was the Manhattan Project. It was our idea. We Jews are behind this bomb. It will be our means, our golem, our means to control the world. Truman went along with it. After all, he was a Freemason, and the Judaic religion and people control Freemasonry. Freemasonry, my friends, is a Jewish cult. And it worships the same gods as does the Jews. And their chief god is the serpent. The serpent. You say, all texts, I've never heard of that. The Jews worship the same god we do. They have the Old Testament. You are wrong, dear friends. And if you were to avail yourself of my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, and you read the first 50 pages only of 432 pages, you would discover who the God of the Jews really is, because I prove it from their own holy books, which are by no means not the Old Testament, but are a series of volumes called the Talmud and the Kabbalah. And by the way, I mentioned to you that I have a picture in the book of Harry Truman in all of his Masonic regalia. And I was about to get to the fact that on the wall behind him, painted by the artist who did this artist drawing of the president, President Harry Truman, the God of the Freemasons is shown. Their God. Did you know there's a picture of their God? The God of the Jews and the God of the Masons? Right here on page 113 of my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, there's the God. And guess what it is? It's the sun god. There's the sun, the golden sun, and coming out are the spires or the, you know, the sun rays. And inside is just the word G, which means generative power, the sex powers of male and female combined. The sun god, all the way from ancient Babylon, Egypt, Greece, Rome. That's the Masonic God. That's the Judaic God. That's why Jesus said to the Jews, you read about it in the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew. He said, your God is not the God of the Old Testament. Yours is a man-made religion that has for its rules and doctrines the traditions of men. And your father, he said, is not the God in heaven. Your father is the devil. Have you ever heard that said in the church? These sniveling, pipsqueak little pastors out there. For fear of the Jews, they will not tell you that Jesus said to the Jews, your God is the devil. I think it might be time, if you're still a member of a so-called Christian church, to confront your pastor, your reverend, your minister, or whatever they call him, your priest, and say, are you going to go with God, with Jesus Christ and what he said? Or your own vain imaginations? Are you going to disregard what Jesus preached with your own man-made doctrines like the Jews do? If so, I'm not going to remain a member of this apostate church and walk out the door. And if enough people had the guts to do it, we might change a few things in the religious system of the Christian establishment. Notice I didn't say the Christian church, because the Christian church believes the words and the messages of Jesus. Unfortunately, the established church, so-called, does not. This is Tex Mar. Stay with us. We got a lot more here on Power of Prophecy as we continue looking at the sniveling pipsqueak and Mason and President Harry S. Truman. Hello, friends. Tex Mar again. You know, I'm talking about Harry Truman today, and these things may be a shock to you. You see, the press have long carried out what I call in my book, a wet kiss relationship with Harry Truman. Oh, the press love a liberal Democrat. They loved Truman. I remember as a young man, I think I must have been about 21 or 22 years old, there was a movie out. It was about the life of Harry Truman, and oh, did they ever make the man look like a hero. I mean, what a man. The buck stops here and all that, and You know, he ended World War II, or he was at least there, present at the end of it. And he set up a post-war world. I mean, this guy was a great man of the people, a wonderful person. You know, he integrated the military forces. He did. Till that time, they had been segregated, but he integrated them. He actually attempted to nationalize the steel mills and transportation industries. He was sort of the Obama of his time, though. But this book, Conspiracy of the Six Morning Star, goes way beyond Truman. You'll be introduced to Billy Graham, to Richard Nixon, to former Vice President Spiro Agnew, to General MacArthur, to Alan Greenspan, Chairman of the Fed Reserve, to Lord Rothschild, to George W. Bush, to Senior Bush, to all many more Rothschilds and Rockefellers and Lenin and Trotsky and so many. You'll also feast your eyes and your brains, your mind on people like Jacob Rubenstein, or should I give you his Gentile name? That would be, of course, Jack Ruby, hitman for the Jewish mafia. Mr. Ruby, of course, killed the lone gunman. The lone gunman. I have to laugh at that one. Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, there's much more here. We talk about Hillary Clinton, the Grand Lodge of Jerusalem, the concentration camps, both the ones that were run by the Nazis and the ones that were run by the Jews after the Nazis left them. You may not know that the Jews ran many concentration camps themselves. They were put in charge of hundreds of concentration camps. Now, while it is said that the Germans arrested and took Jews and others to their camps, when the Jews took over after World War II, these same camps, they brought in Gentiles, many thousands of whom they tortured, raped, beat, miserably killed. That's right. Jews were way more brutal than the Germans were before them. And I suspect more Gentiles died at the hands of Jews after 1945 surrender of Germany than died in all the 12 years of the Nazi rule. Can you imagine? In just a few short years, more people had been massacred by the Jews after World War II than 12 years of the Nazis before World War II. Now, you wouldn't know those kinds of things if you only knew what our textbooks tell you, because they're pretty good at lying and covering up these things. And the New York Times as well, and Parade Magazine and Newsweek and Time and the Washington Post and all the others. You'll really learn a lot. You'll learn about Jerusalem, the most wicked city on earth, and I prove it in this book, Conspiracy of the Six Morning Star. You'll learn why Judaism is the most toxic and poisonous religion ever invented by humankind. I also asked the question, was the Holocaust committed by the Germans truth or fable? In fact, that chapter alone, my having written it, could put me in prison in countries around the world. That's why I don't visit those countries. As long as we have freedom of speech in America, I will avail myself of it. How about you? Freedom of speech, opinion. You know, many years ago, my ministry used to be a 501c3 tax-exempt ministry. I didn't realize then that the IRS and the government didn't want me to tell the truth. One day they came and visited me and said, we're going to audit you. We don't like what you're saying. So what do you mean what I'm saying? Doesn't the IRS practice free speech, the First Amendment? And they told me, no, we don't. We don't care about the Bill of Rights of the Constitution. We're not going to let you have that, Mr. Mars. They spent 4 years auditing me, trying to find out everything I might have said that they didn't agree with before they finally let me alone. Just shortly before it was going to go to federal court, because we see we had to file against them to get them to leave us alone, to quit trying to intimidate and bully us. And so they finally did. We ended up, after 4 years of audit, we didn't owe them 1 cent. I had to laugh one day. I got a phone call from my attorney, and he said, the IRS wants you to send a copy of every one of your books. I said, that's great. I love the IRS to read my books, but I'm not going to send it to them. Let them pay for them, like everybody else. He went, oh, okay. Can you imagine they're auditing you to see how you what you've spoken and written about that they want to punish you for? I mean, this was like the KGB visiting me. Now, a lot of people said that's impossible. IRS doesn't do those things. Yeah, it does. If you're 501c3, it will. Well, I tell you what, friends, I dropped that 501c3 stuff and said, you know, if I'm going to be part of a tax-exempt organization or head of one, actually founder of one, if that gives the IRS and the government the authority to say you no longer have First Amendment rights, I think I'll be glad to pay taxes. So after they ended the audit and sent me a letter and said, you owe no money, we're finished with the audit, we basically said, thank you. Now you can take your 501c3 status and, well, we were nicer than we should have been, but you can just take it and have it. We won't be 501c3 anymore. Not because we owe any money or anything, we've done anything wrong, but because the IRS says we are not entitled, if we receive 501c3 status from the government, in order to get tax benefits, so-called, we have to give up free speech. And who's responsible for this? Well, it's called Jews. It goes back to Lyndon B. Johnson back in 1964 when he and his Jewish pals got Congress to pass legislation that set up this 501c3 program. Before that, churches were just churches and Christian ministries were just Christian ministries. But once the Jews under Lyndon Johnson got through with it, churches were almost all 501c3. Folks, you need to go to your church pastor and ask him, are you 501c3? If they are, they belong to the government and they don't have any rights of free speech. And if your pastor doesn't believe it, I've got a book called Trail of Blood Revisited by Dr. Greg Dixon. And he can buy the book and read it. He'll tell you how the IRS hounded his church. And many other churches have been hounded by the IRS just because the IRS and the government didn't like what they said. Okay, conspiracy of the six-pointed store. I want to tell you right now, you will have never read a book like this ever in your life. Eye-opening revelations and forbidden knowledge about Israel, the Jews, Zionism, the Rothschilds, and world history. Now, folks, you can go to Harvard University or Yale, or as I did. You know, I taught at Golden Gate University. I taught politics and American government, state government, for Park University, for Golden Gate University. I taught 5 years for the University of Texas at Austin. There was never a textbook like this. I had to write it. I had to be the first to write it. I hope you'll order this book. And when you do, you know, whatever profit, if you want to call it that, we get goes right back in the ministry. The book is $25. Please add $5 shipping and handling, a total of $30. Now, why does it cost that much? Because it's a huge book. And just to print it costs us quite a bit of expense. And then to mail it out and all those things. Total of $30. That includes shipping, postage. And we'll get it right out to you. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. By the way, a picture of the Six-Pointed Star, the so-called Star of David, and a red dragon coming up out of churning waters. It'll explain what that means in the book. I think you'll be very interested. You must have this book. $30 postpaid. You can phone us and get it toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Our address is Power of Prophecy, or just write to Tex Morris, at 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Of course, you can go to powerofprophecy.com. And right there on our homepage, you'll see a picture of the book. Order it. We'll have it right out to you. Okay? Now let's return to our program. We're talking about Harry Truman, the presidency, and his relationship with the Jews. He did everything for the Jews, everything they asked him to do. But you know what's strange? When he left the White House, went back to live in his hometown of Independence, Missouri, seems that the Jews had decided he wasn't their man anymore. They didn't want him to be president. In fact, people like Morgenthau and another Jewish political power broker, Mr. Feinberg, visited Truman in the White House and said, you're finished, buddy. And later, after all those years of faithfully serving the Jews and the Zionists, the Jews have now put out the word, especially since the year 2003, that President Harry Truman all along was a secret or a covert anti-Semite. He did whatever Morgenthau and Baruch told him to do for all those years. You know, even his friend who went in the men's clothing business way back after World War I, Eddie Jacobson, this Jew, even he must have decided that his old friend Harry Truman was an anti-Semite. Ed Jacobson, his old World War I and Masonic Lodge buddy, was given the right by Truman to just walk past the guards and into the big double doors of the White House and go right into the Oval Office without even a benefit of having a appointment with the secretary. How many people can do that? Just park your car, walk off the street, down the sidewalk, right into the White House, go right in the Oval Office, and shake hands with your old pal, Harry. Not even having an appointment, Eddie Jacobson. And yet, the Jews say that they found out that all along, Harry Truman was a Jew hater, anti-Semite. You know, recently I did a program here on the air called Anti-Semites Whom I Admire. Well, you know, it may have been really that Harry Truman was an anti-Semite. I'll explain that in just a moment to you. There's a little bit of proof and documentation. I have it in my book, in fact. But whether he was or not, he was a sniveling, cowardly pipsqueak that kept it secret as long as he could. But it was finally found out. Which sort of, again, goes to prove Jesus Christ's warning that whatever men whisper in closets someday will be shouted from the rooftops. I think that's what has happened to Harry Truman. Yes, I do admire some anti-Semites, so-called. Lindbergh, the aviator. You know, Charles Lindbergh. Jimmy Carter. Now, I don't admire every little thing about him, you know, but generally I think Carter's a good man. And there's so many people who I could mention to you, you know, from Pat Buchanan to whoever, have been called anti-Semites over the years. Most of them were not anti-Semites. It's just the Jews think they can smear people with those epithets. In fact, I suggest to you that Tex Mars has been called anti-Semite by quite a number of Jews, of Zionists. And how much do I worry about it and lose sleep at night? Not a whit. And that must really plague him. That must really bother him. Well, Truman didn't want to be treated like Tex Mars is treated. He wanted the accolades and the applause of the Jews. And he knew they were the most powerful force in America, maybe the world. And so he did whatever they wanted. Until the very end. And we're going to get into that. Now, talking about, though, in the good times for the Jews, being their tool. Let's see what transpired. I already told you how he killed hundreds of thousands of Japanese innocent civilians for his Jewish pals. But there's much more. Mr. Morgenthau came to Truman and said, now that Germany has been defeated, we want there to be a program for Germany and its citizens. We want to punish the German people, not just the Nazis. We want all Germans to suffer. And Truman says, well, what do you want me to do, you Jews? And Morgenthau says, we've developed an entire plan. I have a document. We've got to keep it top secret now. It tells you exactly what you will do as president and what our military people will do and what our government that has taken over Germany will do. And one of the things we want you to do, and it's called, now, friends, if you don't believe this, go to the search engines, Google and so forth, or go to Wikipedia and look up the phrase or terms, Morgenthau Plan, Germany. The Jews already had a plan set up. After Germany is defeated, here's what we're going to do. The first thing that we're going to do is to murder a minimum of one-third of all Germans. Murder them. How are they going to murder them? Well, they didn't really care. Put as many as possible in the concentration camps. Turn some of the Germans over to the Soviet Union and let them take them back to work in the salt mines of Siberia in the Gulag. Send them by rail car. Another way we can kill Germans is to take away all their heating oil. Winters get very severe in Germany. We'll take away all their heating oil and give it to neighboring countries like Holland, France, Belgium, and so forth, and let them go without heat this winter and make laws such as you may not cut trees down and use the wood for heat. That'll kill off millions. Another thing we want you to do is go to all the German farmers and take all of their produce, all of their food. Take it and sell it to all the neighboring countries. But let the Germans have none. Now, where did Morgenthau and the Jews get this idea about the food? Take away their food and sell it to other countries and keep the money for yourself? Well, they found out how to do that under Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin in Russia. That's when 16 million Russian people suffered miserably. All the farmers of Russia suffered miserably because they took away their lands. They took away their farm products. They took away their homes. And they created collectivist farm camps. And they said the land no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the communist government. And if we catch any of you keeping any of your own food, you'll die. You know, Stalin was asked by Churchill during one of the World War II post-conferences. Churchill said, I'm just interested, Joe, how many Russian citizens died after you seized all the forms and all the food? Stalin answered reportedly and said, not enough, maybe 16 million. 16 million, that's not enough, he said, but I killed 16 million. They didn't want me to take their land and their food. Now, let's go back to the so-called Holocaust. I think the number is fabricated, but what do the Jews say? 6 million of us died. We can never forget this. And the rest of the world will have to pay us reparations forever because 6 million Jews died in those camps at the hands of the German Nazis. 6 million. What did Truman admit to? Truman's pal, Stalin. 16 million. That's just farmers. That's just people who had little farms. We're not talking about big agricultural outfits. We're talking about little family farmers. And their food was taken away and given to other people, sold to people, or given to the people living in the cities. And then they would search unannounced all the farms in a certain village or town or community. And if anybody was there hiding even one potato or one small sack of corn that they had not turned into the government collective warehouse, they were taken away to the Gulag prison camps. Or they were simply taken out and executed, shot to death for hoarding food. And by the way, my fellow Americans, listen to me very careful. Barack Obama, who is absolutely a red communist, absolutely. Barack Obama recently issued an executive order as president. He didn't go through Congress. An executive order. Stroke of a pen. There it is. And it has set up so-called rural, that is form, rural councils. Every community, every county throughout the 50 states of the United States will have communist bosses, commissars, looking over the people. Believe me. They're going to control all the food supplies of America. It's coming, folks. Communization of our farms. You farmers out there, you've been getting these government supports and subsidies for some years since FDR. Don't worry about it much longer. You don't have to worry about those farm subsidies. You won't be getting them. You'll be just another peon, another kulak, working on a farm owned by the government under Barack Obama and his socialist communist pals. They're already setting up a council in every county in America to watch over and monitor and survey you and steal your food. The bureaucrats, the commies, right here in America, it's coming. You say, I've never heard of such things. If you own two animals, two cows, one horse and one cow, and you own a farm, you'll have to put chips in them, microchips, biochips, in your cows, in your horses, in every rabbit, in every chicken. And you've got to make reports up, monthly reports on how many chickens you own, how many ducks, how many, you said, that text, that's not true. They're not going to make me put a chip in every one of my animals, even turkeys, even chickens, every hog, every cow. Listen to me, dear friends. They have already passed that rule, and they've set a date by which everybody has to have it done. And then they've got something called Agenda 21 on the way. Agenda 21, they're going to make you give up the title to your land. And you're going to be just one of the workers, one of the peasants. You say, well, maybe Obama will leave office by that time. It doesn't matter who the next president will be, Republican or Democrat. This is their plan. And Morgenthau thought about it for the Germans. They didn't get that far, though, thank God. But they did take away much of the food. I mean, German families didn't even have one potato for days on end. They had no heat. It wasn't that they didn't have enough. It wasn't that their devastated, war-torn country was left that way. No, it was because of the United States. And Britain and France was forced to go along with it. And Morgenthau, it was a Morgenthau plan to kill off one-third of all Germans. Boy, they hate Gentiles. And that's why the Jewish Talmud even says, the best of the Gentiles, kill. Not the Nazi generals, not just Hitler and his little clique. The best of the Gentiles. Kill. That's in the Jewish Talmud. Now, the Morgenthau plan was put into effect. And for 2 years, 2 years after World War II ended, untold thousands of Germans died. Now remember, Eisenhower went along with this. Most of the generals did. But there was one man. His name was George Patton. And he said, I will not go along with this mass murder. I will not. Anyway, he said, our true enemy is Moscow, the Soviet Union, and the communist. And he said, and the Jews are the ones wanting to do these evil things. I will not go along with it. I will go back to the United States from Germany, and I will tell the American people what's going on. He never made it. Just like SEAL Team 6. I have no doubt that some of the members of that Navy SEAL Team 6 in Afghanistan said, we will go back and tell America we did not kill Osama bin Laden. That's a hoax. Well, you know what happened to the SEAL Team 6. Many of the members of it were shot down. Their helicopter was shot down. A planned hit to make sure they could never come back to the United States. You'll remember also the case of Pat Tillman, the NFL football star, who thought he was doing his patriotic duty and volunteered for Afghanistan, but when he found out what was really going on, how the United States, the CIA, and the Israeli Mossad were making millions of dollars by letting the heroin poppies be grown and using Afghanistan, stealing its minerals and so forth. Pat Tillman ended up dead. He didn't make it back. He had written his mother and dad and his brother and sister back here in the States that I'm coming home and I'm going to tell the American people the truth. He was killed. Now, SEAL Team 6, killed for what they knew. Pat Tillman, he knew too much. And General George Patton, one of America's greatest World War II heroes, also was killed for knowing too much. Well, he had an accident, let's put it that way, and never was able to come back to America. He was indeed murdered. Now, at the same time, the Secretary of Defense, Mr. James Forrestal, also was murdered because he would not go along with this Morgenthau plan. In his case, it was not even, doctored up as a accident. He was simply thrown out of a 16th floor window of a hospital. Suicided, in other words. The Secretary of Defense, imagine. But naturally, the Jewish media covered it all up. Now, I want to also mention that Truman continued to serve the Jews. And for 2 years, the Morgenthau continued until a former president, Herbert Hoover of all people, decided to visit post-war Germany. When he went over there, he was absolutely flabbergasted. He was shocked. He saw how the German people were living. They had no clean water. They had no food. They had no electrical power. They had no heat. He was astonished. They were dying. They would come up to him on the streets knowing that he was a former U.S. president, and they would beg him, please help us. He found out what was really going on, and he informed President Truman at the White House, I am going to tell the American people what I see here. Guess what? Truman was forced to discontinue the Morgenthau plan. If it had not been for Herbert Hoover, tens of millions of Germans would have perished. Now, after he left office, President Truman went to Independence, Missouri, he and his wife, Bess, and the presidential library was established there, the Truman Presidential Library, and it was there that they found, crumpled up years later, in the so-called Oval Office, sort of a simulated-looking Oval Office of the White House that they had set up there in that museum, they found pages of his daily diary when he was in the White House that had been pulled out of his secret diary. But these pages were to become the secret pages because they were taken out by him, apparently, because he would use that Oval Office to work and to work on his memoirs, his autobiographies that were published. And he actually took these pages, crumpled them up, and threw them behind a file cabinet. After his death, these pages that he had first intended to use for historical purposes as a reference were found behind that file cabinet. Some of the pages that explained what he really thought about the Jews. He was forced to be their stooge. They had put him in office. They made him what he is. But they had also told him at the end of his presidency that they would not let him run again for the office of the president because he didn't do everything right at the end that they told him to do. For example, he did not let Stalin take over the country of Greece. And that was one of the things that the Jews of America wanted him to do. But he would not go along with that. But here's what he said in his diary. It was found. We realize when we read these, I'm going to read a portion of it now to you. There was a secret bitterness and an ill feeling that he had long harbored for his Jewish masters. Here's what he said about the Jews. Dated 6 p.m. Monday, July 21, 1947, from his diary pages. The Jews, he wrote, are very, very selfish. They care not how many Estonians, Latvians, Finns, Poles, Yugoslavs, or Greeks get murdered or mistreated as displaced persons, as long as the Jews get special treatment. Yet when the Jews have power, physical, financial, or political, neither Hitler nor Stalin has anything on them for cruelty or mistreatment to the underdog. Wow. They're more cruel, they're more willing and will mistreat the underdog than even Hitler or Stalin, the Jews. That's how evil they are, according to President Truman. Now, this came out in the year 2003. Now, remember, so many Jews thought this was their beloved Zionist president. But in fact, he had harbored all this ill will against them. And in 2003, they found these papers and published them. And at that moment, they began to turn on him. And friends, to this day, you can find many references by Jewish writers and newsmen who call Truman an anti-Semite. Now he's known as an anti-Semite. He was their great hero. But now they find out what he really thought about them. And finally, there's one other reason that they refused to support him in another run for president. And this is something, my friends, I would like you to spread. Nobody knows about, but I'm going to tell you about it, that I discovered. When he did recognize in 1948 the nation of Israel as an independent nation, and it was very important. You see, the United States and the Soviet Union were the two world superpowers. And when he recognized Israel as a sovereign nation, the rest of the world and the United Nations just went along with it, and the state of Israel was born. But when he was given the document to sign, he did something very interesting. The words were this. These are the words he was supposed to sign. It was put on his desk on May 14th, 1948. It says, the United States recognizes the provisional government in Palestine as the de facto authority for the new Jewish state. He was supposed to sign a document that recognized the new Jewish state as an independent nation. But when he got it, he said no. He reached over with his pen and he lined through the words, new Jewish. And right above them, he wrote in pen and ink, state of, so that it would read not the new Jewish state, but instead it would read the state of Israel. He recognized then the state of Israel, but Harry Truman, by his own pen, denied that this would become a Jewish state. Do you get the significance of this, friend? Today, the Palestinians have been driven out of their own land that they've been robbed and stolen from, and many of them killed. Many of them would like to return, but the Jews say, no, ours is a Jewish state. We don't want Christians here. We don't want you Arabs here. We're a Jewish state. But now we find that's a lie. You go back to the original document signed by Harry Truman, and he refused to agree that it would be a Jewish state. It's a nation, just like any other nation, the nation of Israel. And that's all it is. Friends, when anyone even mentions that America is a Christian nation, the Jews go crazy. The ADL will criticize you. The hounds of the Baskervilles of Tel Aviv come out after you. They say, America is not a Christian nation. But they say, but Israel is a Jewish nation, a Jewish state. Well, it's not. It was founded and recognized by Truman as just another secular state. If America is not a Christian nation, and it's true, it's not in our Constitution, but neither is it true that Israel is a Jewish state. This is extremely important. And for that, the Jews told President Truman, you better pack up your bags. You're leaving the White House. You betrayed us. And then, of course, we find out belatedly many years after that in 2003 that he said some pretty wicked things about them. Truthful, however. And thus he is known today as an anti-Semite. Well, this has been Tex Mars, and I pray that you will tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.